We pretty much have everything. We have from wild ales to barrel-aged stuff, English styles, German styles. If you come to St. Louis and don't find a beer that you like, there's probably no beer on the planet that you like.
You're listening to Pubcast Worldwide. Greetings, thirsty listeners, and welcome to this episode of Pubcast Worldwide, the podcast where we get to know interesting people around the world, chatting with them over beers, cocktails, and other libations at the coolest pubs, bars, and breweries on the planet. I'm your host, Chris Lukey, a lager lover, serial event planner, and a St. Louis native. It's time for another Pubcast edition of Flight School, where we explore a flight of beers with a brewmaster, and for the first time, we're heading to my hometown of St. Louis, Missouri for an episode. We're going to be drinking with Florian Kuplent, one of the most experienced brewmasters in the biz at his brewery, Urban Chestnut. So, what are the three things you can expect from today's show? First, we talk about old world beer, especially lagers. It's pretty unique on this show where we really get to dive into some old school beer styles, and that's just one of the things that Urban Chestnut specializes in as a brewery. Second, we're going to talk about Florian's history as a brewer. Not only was he born in Bavaria and apprenticed over there, he also has a degree in brewing science, has brewed all over Europe, and has actually brewed for one of the bigger names in beer as well. Which brings me to my third point. We're going to be talking about big beer, macro brews. Florian used to work at Anheuser-Busch, so not only do we discuss what it was like to work in beer from that standpoint, but this feeds into a conversation about the local St. Louis beer scene and what makes it so special. We're going to give you a pretty good background on Urban Chestnut, but just so you know a little bit about it going into the episode, it's one of the larger OG independent breweries in St. Louis that emerged in 2010, 2011 during one of the most recent craft beer booms. I'm not going to lie, I have some biases towards my hometown and the St. Louis beer scene. You'll hear a couple of those discussed throughout the episode, but hopefully that just gives you one more perspective on the St. Louis beer scene. With that, grab a spot at the locals table, brush up on your beer knowledge, and let's travel to St. Louis, Missouri to meet up with Florian Kuplent at Urban Chestnut. Here we go.
Grab a beer! Grab a stein!
Florian, where are we at, and what are we drinking for the first beer?
We're going to be drinking our Zwickel, which is our flagship lager, definitely our largest beer that we sell in terms of production volume. A nice, very balanced, malty lager that's based on the Helles style that's very predominant in Bavaria, where I'm originally from.
Yeah.
One of the first beers that we made, and really all about the sessionability, balance between malt, the hops, and the crisp note you get from the fermentation. We use a lager yeast for that, so just a very perfectly balanced beer.
It's been a long time favorite of mine, and am I wrong? Is a Zwickel also kind of its own style of lager? Is that purely
it's
the
basically
name you have
for it? Basically unfiltered. So Zwickel is the sampling valve on a fermentation or maturation tank. Don't ask me where that word comes from, but it's German, but it's also being used here in the U.S. And the style is named that because the beer is unfiltered, natural. You would basically get the same as if you were to drink out of a maturation tank at that point, in its original form, I guess.
It's been one of my longtime favorites here at an Urban Chestnut. And speaking of Urban Chestnut, can you describe the setting and where we're at?
So we're sitting in our second brewery, which is the large production facility on Manchester Avenue in the Grove here in St. Louis. We are kind of sitting on one side of the main part of the building where we have our brew house, which is right behind the bar, and then a large beer hall with seating for about 400 people. So it's a large open space with the brew house behind the bar kind of as the focal point of the whole room.
I've always described this spot as kind of an urban beer hall because you got the lofty ceilings, an urban modern beer hall, I should say.
It's definitely more on the modern side. It's the building is about 80, 90 years old, and it used to be various things throughout its life. The last thing that it was used for is just a warehouse, basically, and we open it up a little bit, put some windows in, and edit the brew house and edit some walls to make it a little bit more manageable, and obviously all the process and brewing equipment. And yeah, here we are 3 years later, I guess.
Love it. Well, you guys have been very successful, and I got to say cheers. Welcome to
Thank
the show.
You.
And for those of you listening out there, I want to make sure I give Florian a proper introduction. I'm here with Florian Kuplent.
Perfect.
Excellent. All right. I always need to make sure I get my German pronunciations correct, being German myself. And Florian is no stranger to the beer scene in St. Louis or anywhere, for that matter. As he mentioned, originally from Germany. He's been in the beer scene here for over 2 decades, I believe.
I'm that old, yes.
That's your experience is the way I like to describe it. But what are some other highlights I may have missed, Florian?
Yeah, I grew up in a small town in Bavaria, close to Munich. Worked for a local brewery there for a few years, basically as an apprentice. Got a degree in brewing science from the University of Munich at Weihenstephan, and then worked for another brewery here in town that's slightly larger than we are for...
I can only imagine what that was.
For about 8 years in new beer development, basically for them, and then in their yeast facility for a couple of years, and then opened up Urban Chestnut with a friend of mine 7 years ago, I guess. Yeah, we left AB in 2010 and brewed the first beer at Urban Chestnut in early 2011.
Well, we're going to get to some talk on big beer a little later, but we've got a flight of 6 in front of us today, so we've got some good beers to chat through as well. So before I jump into our next question, shall we crack open and try beer number 2?
Sure. This is a take on the Bavarian style lager, an American take, I guess, and in that regard also a very classic style. It's an American style lager that we call Urban Underdog.
Mm-hmm.
In a way similar to the beer that we just tried, just a little bit lighter. So it's a beer that we brew with corn, and the hopping is also slightly reduced. We use the same yeast strain for that, and you probably get a little bit of that sulfury, yeasty note, but also a little bit of the hop character. Again, it's very subtle. It's mm-hmm. This beer is all about subtleties and a little bit of sweetness from the malt when you drink it.
You know, you mentioned yeasty, and one topic that always comes up on the show, also being kind of a West Coast-based show, is hop character. But we don't always talk about yeast character. Can you maybe give our listeners a little education on how to kind of taste yeast or notice yeast when you're jumping into a beer?
In this case, we're trying a lager beer, so... The yeast character typically is always going to be very subtle. You
okay.
get some, maybe some sulfur notes, slight sulfur notes, some maybe a hint of fruitiness, but ultimately it should be crisp, it should be clean, it should be easy to drink, and yeast gets you to that point, mm-hmm. but doesn't really produce a lot of flavors mm-hmm. or a lot of character that's specific to that. So it's a thing that's subtle. Once we get to ales, obviously a lot more comes into play, a lot of fruitiness, a lot more character from the yeast can actually be noticed in the beer later on.
And specifically to Urban Underdog, this is a relatively new beer for you guys,
correct? Yeah, we've been brewing it for a couple years, I believe, mostly on draft initially, and then it's one of the staff favorites, and we decided that it would be a good beer to introduce to the market here in St. Louis. So we did that as a test market, basically, and that's mm-hmm. done really well. And starting, I think it was summer last year,
yeah.
we kind of rolled it out on a larger scale. And to me, it's a great, nicely balanced beer that is great in the summer. But even in winter, when it's cold out, it's nice. It's not, doesn't assert itself too much, but it's something thirst quenching and mm-hmm. still has a lot of flavor.
What motivated you guys to go with the Urban Underdog to create that in addition to another very successful lager, the first one we had, the Zwickel?
We think that there's a place for both of them. Mm-hmm. If you want something a little bit more flavor but still very sessionable, Zwickel is perfect. But mm-hmm. if you're looking for something that's a great thirst quencher in the summer, I think Underdog is probably the beer to grab. So slightly different nuances, just like other people make 5-10 different IPAs. We just have a lot of different lagers with different subtleties, different notes in them.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. And as we get through, we've still got a little work to do on these first two lagers. Another question for you around Urban Chestnut. For those that aren't familiar, tell us a bit about the brewery and also maybe a bit about a term I believe you call brewing divergency.
Sure.
Which I think is very unique to the overall mix of beers that you do.
So we started in 2010, 2011, as I mentioned before. The idea was to set up a brewery that gives us the license to pretty much brew anything that we like. I grew up in Germany. You can see that three of the beers for sure mm-hmm. of the beers on the table are basically of German heritage.
Yep.
So I do think we're known for the German beers that we make, but I didn't just want to make German beer styles. I used to live in Belgium for a little bit, used to brew beer in England, and certainly have traveled around quite a bit.
Holy smokes.
So
you've been a little more places than I had originally thought, too.
it's been fun, and as I said, I wanted to be able to do beers from those countries, and mm-hmm. that's why we came up with Beer Divergency, where we have our Reverend Series, where we try to recreate very classic European styles, like mm-hmm. Zwickel, like wheat beer, or English styles, and use ingredients from those areas to really replicate those flavors as closely as possible and try to get you to those places without you having to travel there. Mm-hmm. And then our Revolution Series is an outlet for us to experiment, come up with new flavors, and be creative, use different hop varieties, different yeast strains, and maybe combine things that hadn't been combined before.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've always loved the Revolution and the Reverent Series because I think, like you said, it's an interesting mix when most breweries in the U.S. tend to gravitate towards that Revolution side. I love the homage to, I'd say, a lot of more traditional style type beers that still have a lot of room for creativity within them.
I think so, yeah.
And you know, it's interesting because I've also thought your two locations kind of have that too, because this is almost kind of the Revolution style location. Then your other location down by St. Louis University has that straight up German beer garden style feel to it. I think you even have the gravel sitting out
yep.
there, the white gravel. Like, it looks exactly like something you'd come
and
across in Germany.
Very subtle, but we do the branding. You'll notice that all the signs here and a lot of the color scheme is that orange that stands for the Revolution Series.
Oh, okay.
Midtown Brewery has that blue Reverend Series. It's you'll have to look around to notice it, but there's some subtle differences.
So that wasn't just an assumption on my end. That's kind of what you're doing
definitely
with both
some
of the locations.
On that, yeah.
Okay.
And some people actually notice, which is fun, that we focus on some of these details, and it's great when people
all right.
notice that.
Well, I feel like I just earned this flight by making that little observation right there. So, well, awesome. As far as, you know, you mentioned your background in brewing a little bit and some of the different spots you've been in, and I kind of want to dig into that a little bit more as well, but what led to Urban Chestnut as a whole? What was the biggest motivating factor that got this place off the ground?
I think the biggest factor probably was that I always wanted to be able to completely control what beers we make and mm-hmm. create recipes and come up with new things, and had always been in the back of my mind maybe at some point in my life open my own brewery. And timing was right, and we put some numbers together, mm-hmm. wrote our business plan, found a building, talked to people to invest in the company, and ultimately then just pulled the plug and went for it. And yeah, just being able to have the freedom to do what you like, obviously within the limitations of what you have to sell the beer to people that actually are going to end up mm-hmm. drinking it. But yeah, being able to have the creative license basically to be able to do that.
Was there also maybe a gap you saw in the market in St. Louis as well, where there was space for a brewery like one that had that mix of traditional and new world style beers?
Sure. As I said, opened in 2011, and at that point there really was only a few breweries on the market. Even fewer of them actually packaged their beer, and the scene has changed quite a bit. There's now over 30, 40 breweries in the metro area. Mm-hmm. A lot more diversity and a lot of exciting stuff happening. But 7 years ago, it was quite different. Just being able to brew beer here in St. Louis with that much brewing heritage in the city that has a lot of beer lovers was just fun, and I think it just lent itself to it.
Well, it's no secret that St. Louis has a rich tradition for beer, largely based on big beer, which we'll talk about here in a second. But let's jump into beer number 3.
So we're staying with the lagers. In this case, it's our German-style Pilsner called Stammtisch. Mm-hmm. And Stammtisch is the regulars table that many bars, restaurants in Europe have. And people get together either daily or once a week or once a month. Always at the same time, at the same place, at the same table, and drink beer and talk. And this beer is designed for that. Very similar to a Zwickel, very similar malt bill. A mm-hmm. Little less malty, a little less caramel malt in the grist. But the focus on that beer specifically is on the hops. Mm-hmm. So it's a fairly crisp, fairly bitter, pronounced bitterness pilsner that has nice notes of some classic European noble hop.
Okay.
Mostly Hallertau Mittelfrüh is the main driver, that aroma.
Mm. Yeah, the hop character definitely stands out in that one a little more than the first
dry
two that we
had. Crisp. Another one of those staff favorites, I guess, that we ended up brewing for a while and then ended up packaging. We had released it as seasonal a couple times, and now it's in our core lineup. The alternative to the IPA, I guess, but still about 5% alcohol, so still very sessionable beer. But if you want a little bit more hop character and you want to stick with the lagers, that's probably the way to go.
Well, I'm seeing more breweries going the route of pilsners that have a pretty distinct hop profile where, you know, especially some of the ones that are known for their IPAs, when they want to get into some of those more sessionable beers, they start, the pilsner seems to be the natural spot to go. Because is there a little more room to play with that hop profile?
I think depending on what you want to do, this here is more of a classic beer. Although if you go to Germany, for example, it's going to be hard to find a beer that's some of them are bitter, but they don't have that hop aroma and flavor. They're typically a little bit crisper and a little bit lighter in that regard. So this kind of stands out for that. But yeah, if you wanted to play with different hop varieties to showcase those specific varieties, I think having a cleaner base, I'll just call it, with a cleaner lager fermentation, it's probably be able to showcase that specific hop character a little bit better, because it's really all about the hops. IPAs, I think there's some malt character to it. With a pilsner, that's a lot more subtle. It's a lot easier to showcase that specific hop character.
Now, I've got a couple questions based on your global experience in brewing. I'm curious. I've two similar questions. What's the biggest thing you learned from brewing with some smaller brewers over in England? You mentioned Belgium, Germany. What are some of the things you picked up there that added to your toolbox of experience?
Interestingly enough, all those countries have their own methods in a way. There's different philosophy, and it's fun to go to small breweries in all those places and just look at the tradition and see how people are doing things. Mm-hmm. Brewing beer is a pretty well understood science that ultimately is the same, but just seeing how English brewers use single step infusion mash versus German brewers still sometimes using a decoction mash. Different fermentation profiles, cask ales in England that take the responsibility of fermentation almost to the publican. Very different concept compared to Germany, where beer is finished and typically filtered at the brewery and then sent out to accounts. Just being able to see all those subtle differences and being able to kind of play on that in the brewery here has been a lot of fun.
And alternatively, what's something that you learned from working in big beer?
Just the organization and understanding the business aspect of the whole operation, and that ultimately we all want to be able to survive, so we have to pay back our bank loans and pay our employees. Yeah, just being focusing on organizing.
See, you really went the business angle on that answer really quickly.
Well, that's ultimately what it comes down to. Yes, it's art and it's fun, but if we don't pay our bills, we're not going to be able to be around. So that's in a way that's definitely an important aspect of the whole operation. But I also meet a lot of friends. There's Anheuser-Busch had a lot of great people in various departments, and we still have some of them involved. A lot of these guys are retired now, but they still live close to here, and we do a few projects and a few things with them, and keep them busy and tie it to the brewing industry. So that's a nice benefit as well.
Well, I mean, being that this is our first ever St. Louis episode, and we talked that a lot of people know St. Louis for that Anheuser-Busch heritage, I gotta ask kind of the elephant in the room question. What did you see happen to the beer scene in St. Louis when that buyout happened, and what was it like kind of being right in the middle of that shuffle?
I think Anheuser-Busch always gets a bad reputation for being big, but I mean, I guess there's some breweries that maybe all they want to do is stay small and serve their local market, which is totally fine. Anheuser-Busch over the years took a different route and became a very successful business. It was always focused on quality. I was very proud to work there, and as I said, I made a lot of good friends. And with the takeover, the InBev takeover, I think what shifted was a lot more focus on the money aspect of the operation. And the tradition and heritage, which was very important for Anheuser-Busch, kind of went away a little bit, and focus was definitely more on the financial aspect of it.
Yeah, that's the impression I got being kind of involved peripherally to it, because I mentioned I used to work for them briefly, not nearly as long as you, but I saw that shift, and because when I worked there, I was proud to work there. I've never been a hater on Big Beer because doing a podcast that oftentimes has a craft beer kick to it, it's often easy to hate on those larger entities. But I think that emphasis of quality, the amount of pride that people had for working there, I've always said there's a time and place for a macro brew, whether that's a Cardinals game, out on the golf course, whatever that may be.
So you don't have to like the beer. I prefer to drink our beers over
I'm not disagreeing with that.
There's a time and place for everything, I guess. And if you don't like the business practices, that's fine too. I'm not a fan of it either. I prefer to do what we're doing. And ultimately, the way things evolve, companies get bigger, companies disappear, and that's just how the world operates, I guess.
Well, I've got a slightly different spin on that question. Right after we dive in and discuss beer, number four, what are we looking at, Florian?
We are now moving to the ale side. This is another pretty classic German style, a Bavarian wheat beer. Mm-hmm. Brewed with over 50% wheat malt. And I should say what I didn't say before, that we actually import malt directly from a couple of malt houses in Germany. So we get containers in directly from them. Really focusing on working with the companies that make our raw materials, our ingredients. We talk and work with hop farmers directly. And I talk to them and I go over there and make sure that that we basically are aligned. They're focused on high quality, and so are we. But that starts with your ingredient, just like cooking. If you use good ingredients for your cooking process, chances you're going to end up with something good are much higher than if you start with cheap ingredients that don't meet your quality standards. So that's a very, very important aspect. So we use wheat malt in that, and then we ferment that with a very specific Bavarian yeast strain that produces a fairly fruity kind of banana.
You get that smell right when you get it up to your nose, that banana. I mean, and that's characteristic of a lot of wheat and even Belgian beers, I'd say, where you get that banana scent from the get-go. This has been one of my longtime favorites of yours. I've always had a bias towards wheat beers and German-influenced beers, and I think this one has always been one of my personal favorites that you guys do.
And the name of the beer is Schnickelfritz, which means rascal, term from Germany that I honestly, growing up in Germany, had never heard, but it must be something that...
It's a great name, too. Like, even if you don't know German, I mean, Schnickelfritz just has, like, a memorable ring to it.
And there's a lot of people that talk to me that grew up with German parents or German grandparents that know that name, so they were called Schnickelfritz or rascal by their grandparents, so works out well.
That's awesome. Well, we were just talking about big beer, but I do want to shift the spin to what the beer culture in St. Louis is like now and how you've seen it grow up over the past 7 or so years. How would you characterize it here in the great city of St. Louis, Missouri?
I think the nice thing about St. Louis is that there's a large array of breweries making totally different beers. We're not just focused on IPAs. Certainly there's breweries that make IPAs, but looking at the West Coast, I think there's a lot more diversity in terms of the focus of breweries on different styles.
Totally agree.
And we pretty much have everything. We have from small to large, from wild ales to barrel-aged stuff to English styles, German styles. So I think if you come to St. Louis and don't find a beer that you like, then there's probably no beer on the planet that you like.
Well, I agree with everything that you just said, because I think one thing that seasonal spots like St. Louis and other Midwestern cities have going for them is you can do a variety of beers because you can pair it with the season. You know, out on the West Coast, IPAs tend to taste good year-round when it's always 60-degree weather. Here there's an element that you just don't get in some of these less seasonal locations.
We've certainly had a very cold winter this year. So.
Yeah, so I imagine your stout and porter sales or any those might have been pretty high. Yeah. Well, we've got a couple more beverages in front of us, and I've got a couple more questions for you. So I would say let's jump into beer number 5 for a little discussion around that.
So this is a little bit, well, I probably shouldn't say it's unusual for us because we've been brewing this beer for a while now, but it's a Flemish-style red ale, sour beer.
Yep.
I used to work in Belgium for a little bit, and I was always a big fan of Rodenbach, kind of that almost cherry, fruity note with the tartness behind it, and that's beer that's kind of going in that direction. So we partially ferment that in used oak barrels to get a little bit of that wood character. It has that acetic character and then also that malty base. You get a little bit of funkiness.
You definitely get the sour from the scent. Also the color. The color is beautiful. I mean, it's like you mentioned cherry. It's kind of, you know, I wouldn't go that far. It's got that kind of that amber red mix, I would say, between the two. That is a good beer. You guys should be known for this beer. This is delicious.
Well, thank you. I'm pretty proud of that one. I think that's the fun thing about that one is it is blended. So we take different starting points that get blended together, and hopefully we'll always come up with the same taste. But mm-hmm. our brewer spent a lot of work on that, selecting barrels that work for this, mm-hmm. making the base beer, and then ultimately blending the beer. And we've had it on tap now for quite a while. We've also released it as a bottle release, a seasonal bottle release a couple of times. And yeah, something a little bit different. Also, not bad in the summer. I think that little bit of tartness gives it
a... Yeah, nothing we've had today has been like too aggressively heavy to the point where I could drink a couple of each of these so far.
And I'm a big believer of that.
Yeah.
I personally like to not get drunk on beers, but I like to be able to sit mm-hmm. down and have a couple, two, three beers and still be able to enjoy them. And I think for the vast majority, our beers are designed towards that, where mm-hmm. you can enjoy a few and hopefully still want another one after that.
Well, we've certainly been enjoying more than a few on today's show. As we're getting towards the end of the episode, I always like to ask a bit of a fun question in the wrap-ups. Do you have a good drinking story or a good industry story from your years in the business? Maybe something that helps us get to know you and your experience a little more.
Good drinking story.
Doesn't need to be incriminating either.
Most of them aren't, typically.
That's good.
One of the fun things is, maybe not so much of a story, but what I always enjoy is going to different places and drinking in bars that are frequented by locals mm-hmm. Whenever I travel. There's a lot of heritage and a lot of history in some of these pubs in England or mm-hmm. bars in Germany that are a lot of fun, and realizing how much history and heritage there is. Drinking beer there tastes, it just feels different, and it's a lot of fun. I've been lucky to be able to brew beer in a lot of different places and still have a lot of friends around the world, and whenever I get a chance, I'll try to visit them. But it's a nice community that's fairly small, and if I had the choice again of picking a job, I would not want to do anything else but become a brewer. It's definitely a lot of fun, a lot of creativity that goes into mm-hmm. it, a lot of different aspects, the business aspect, the creativity, being able to create beers, working with farmers mm-hmm. on selecting ingredients. It's very rewarding.
The creativity is always something that pops up in these interviews. Just out of curiosity, what's the most creative beer, success or failure, that you've ever done professionally or personally?
Well, to me, creativity doesn't necessarily mean that it has to be this outstanding thing that has never been done before.
Yeah, I guess I kind of asked the question that way. My fault.
Let's pick Zwickel, for example. Again, it's about subtleties. It's mm-hmm. about the quality of the malt that you start with. It's about the quality of the hops. So it does start with your discussion with the farmer that mm-hmm. grows the hops. And then using and utilizing those ingredients to come up with a recipe, that to me has a lot more to do with creativity than just throwing 50 different things into a vat and coming up with something that may be new. It's, to me, creativity means you take what you have and you try to perfect it over time. And there's always going to be differences because your ingredients change over time, but trying to keep that consistent. Mm-hmm. In a way, to me, that's also creativity because you have to react to certain things. You have to make changes on the fly and be able to have an open mind to change things.
Yeah. Well, I think there is another creative beer at the end of the table, so we'll jump into beer number 6 before we wrap up the day.
So this is probably, yeah, this is the biggest beer that we have on the table, one of our IPAs, STL IPA, St. Louis IPA.
Mm-hmm.
Just started canning that.
Okay.
This can design is very new.
It's a good-looking can. Definitely has a revolution-looking style to it.
I like the color scheme. Again, something, I love IPAs. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, with 8% alcohol, it's tougher to drink 3 or 4 in a
right
setting, but one definitely will do. This has some nice hoppy notes, obviously.
I was going to say, definitely on the West Coast style of things.
One thing I did not mention before is we talked about Zwickel being unfiltered, but we actually don't filter any of our beers. So
some
of them have a little bit of a haze to it. This one probably just a little touch.
Yeah, this and, looks IPA-ish for sure.
Yeah. Just preserves more of the flavor. Gives
okay.
you that true beer flavor. Yeah, just 8% alcohol, quite bitter, but crisp, not too overpowering. For what it is, I think it's still fairly nicely balanced.
I'm digging that. Good one to close out on because you don't want to go too hoppy at the beginning by any means. You know, as we start wrapping things up here, what's a question you wish I would have asked about whether about yourself or Urban Chestnut, or just maybe some closing thoughts on Urban Chestnut that you want to leave our audience with?
I think we've covered a lot of things. One thing we didn't talk about maybe that could be interesting to people that visit St. Louis, we have a pilot brewery across the street here, and we offer flights of beers that are being made in that pilot brewery, and then people can come in, rank, rate those beers on their mobile device, and give us some feedback, and that's been very popular.
What is that called?
It's the URB, the Urban Research Brewery.
The Urban Research Brewery. You know, that's actually kind of one of the questions I usually ask, too. You know, we're here hanging out in the Grove, a pretty cool, hip nightlife spot in St. Louis after, theoretically, if we were to finish up our beers and bar hop somewhere else, what are a couple spots people should make sure they visit?
Ooh, I'm the wrong guy. Well, so the cool thing about St. Louis is that it actually has a lot of different neighborhoods. So Grove is definitely a great place for nightlife. Central West End is not very far from here. Mm-hmm. A lot of great restaurants. Soulard, a lot of great old bars, some Irish bars down there. Downtown as well with the project at the Arch that's coming to close pretty soon. There's a lot of stuff going on. So St. Louis is not one single entity in a way. It's this conglomerate of different neighborhoods and that have totally different feel. And I think just exploring that is cool. And you'll always find a bar and a brewery close by.
Oh, yeah. It's a great spot. I am a St. Louis fanboy for sure. I'm always spreading the good word about it. So come to St. Louis, explore the town, explore the beer scene. You won't regret it. As far as next things for Urban Chestnut, what's got you excited that's coming up for you guys?
We've done a lot of projects over the last few years. Now it's time to kind of focus on working on some of the processes. We have a lot of equipment that we want to fine-tune a little bit, work on some of the beers, fine-tune them. Got a couple releases ready to go for 2018. And it's always going to stay exciting. Do a bunch of the stuff in the pilot brewery. So always create some projects for ourselves.
Yeah, well, excited to see what's on tap next. And now, as far as connecting with you guys, what's the best way to keep in touch with all the things going on with you guys on social media, the interwebs?
Absolutely. Twitter, at Urban Chestnut, Facebook, obviously. Those two social media platforms are probably the ones that we use the most. And if you try to get information, that's probably where to go. Or our website, urbanchestnut.com. One thing I didn't mention before is our brewery in Germany. So if you happen to be in Germany, close to Munich, there's a small brewery just north.
I heard about that. I didn't know you had a German location until yesterday, actually.
Yeah, that's our little project there. Very small brewery right in the heart of the Hallertau hop growing area in Wolnzach. There's a hop museum there, which is worth visiting as well. So if you happen to be in the area, there's a restaurant right next to our brewery that makes some great German food. You can hang out with locals, and we have a little different lineup. And as I said, just visiting the hop area is fun.
Sounds like you've got a nice bias for all the right reasons to all these little like cheersy type spots where all the locals go and hang
out. It's fun to... That's what I enjoy the most, as I mentioned before, just hanging out with the locals to get their spin on things and get their take on things and see what they're talking about. And ultimately, that's how bars kind of became to be, right? People talk about things and enjoy life. That's ultimately what this should be about.
Absolutely. Well, this has been a ton of fun. I'll have links to all of those in the show notes. Florian, thank you so much for joining me on today's show.
Cheers.
Cheers. Prost. And for those of you listening, we will catch you guys again next time.
Hey, thanks for listening. And thanks to Florian and the whole team at Urban Chestnut for helping make this episode happen. Personally, I thought it was an honor to get to talk to Florian since he has so much beer knowledge inside and out. And I was excited to finally do an episode back in my hometown, and Urban Chestnut was a great place to start. And man, I need to start planning my next trip to Europe now that I know they've got a brewery over there so I can head to Bavaria and hit that place up. I guess that's my call to action for myself, call to action for you too, but I'll give you just one more. If you liked what you heard, make sure to head over to pubcastworldwide.com and sign up for the monthly brews letter. That's where you can hear about events and deals that we've got going on. And finally, make sure you stick around for more episodes that are coming right around the bend. We've got more in St. Louis, a special Bourdain tribute episode coming up with some of our past guests. I know you won't want to miss that one. And then, funny enough, it's back to Europe for a couple episodes across the pond. With that, thanks for listening. Stay thirsty, and we'll catch you back here next time. Prost!